Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 190 for Spring Semester 2024. Today, the weighted average cost of capital. Before we do that, we will have a look at the numbers, and then we'll do WAC, and then we will have a quiz to finish off this happy time we have together. And as you can see, we are on a bull market today. It's not spectacularly bullish, but I mean, a bull is a bull. There is a sentiment that yes, the underlying economy is in good shape. However, the hope that the Fed was going to lower interest rates later in the year, that is pretty much gone now, simply because the inflation numbers are not terrible, but they are stubborn. They just don't want to give up. Every few months, they pop back up, and not terribly, but enough to show us that the embers are still glowing of that inflation we had over the past couple of years. So the markets are not being propelled with that accelerant of the expectation of lower interest rates, but they still are being propelled by the general expectation of an economy that is improving. So we see that the Dow, the typical pattern, Dow is up 0.13%, S&P 500, a little riskier portfolio, up 0.21%, and the NASDAQ, the riskiest of the portfolios, magnifying bull and bear markets, it's up more than a third of a percent. So that's good news. Obviously, it's not spectacular. And crude had started out last night. Now, again, these are commodity markets, so they don't follow the clock of the stock markets. Now, last night, the crude started off decently down at about 85 a barrel, and then it started climbing back up from there, and it broke above where it had yesterday, where it had closed in the previous trading session, and then now it's dropping back down again. Thank heavens. We are sitting right about in the middle of that trading band that I was telling you about. We're now in an 82 to 88 trading range, and it seems to like that. It bounces down to the down low on it, and it pushed up a little through the top of it, but it seems to care about this trading range for the time being. And as long as the world oil supply situation stays where it is, we'll probably stay in that range around 85, 86 for a while longer, which is good because, one, high oil prices kill us because that makes transportation costs go up. And the other part is that we don't need the aggravation of uncertainty in crude oil prices, which translates into uncertainty in costs that businesses and households face. And I've said this before, you're finance professionals. Now, you might not be able to talk the way I'm talking now, right now, but as you get more involved in this, this is the way you carry on a conversation in finance. You give this authority that you don't talk like you know it all, but you talk like you understand the boundaries of your uncertainties and have an awareness of the different markets and the consequences of price changes in those markets. That's one of those intermediate-term goals, is begin to talk in these ways where you can carry on more intelligently, talk more informed than the average person does. That's what carries you in the world of finance, is that ability to think but not be swaggering and like you know where the markets are going or something like that. Now, gold, oh man, gold just seems to just, it just keeps going up, and silver is too. That is usually a little concerning when you have commodities prices rising. There are two ways you can take it. Commodities prices may reflect latent expectations of inflation. That's the dark side of it. The other side of it, however, is that a healthy economy should be having a demand, an increasing demand for commodities, metals, hydrocarbons, hydrocarbon products, grains and of all kinds of food sources, food resources. So that way you look at it, you wouldn't be too concerned about these commodities prices rising the way they are. It might just be a sign that the world economy is waking up and demand is starting to surge and supplies will catch up later, but not right now. 10-year bond, there's that yield. It is does not like it. It doesn't. It did not want to get below 4.00, and it's gone up a little bit, although it is falling right now. But it's still, from the opening bell, it's up 4 basis points. Nothing terrible, but you put together some days of that kind of a yield increase, and you get into the territory where interest rates are beginning to crimp the growth rate of the economy. Keep our fingers crossed that it's. But as you can see from the spark chart, it spiked at the opening bell. It was up seriously, and it's been tailing downward. It's still above where it finished last night, but at least it's giving up on some of that yield increase. Now, the yield increase, of course, means the price decrease. Price decrease means that there is selling of bonds more than there is buying of bonds. So that would free up some money. Where's that money going? Well, it's going, some of it is into equities, but that's not particularly spectacular. The worst thing would be if that money being freed up from bonds is part of what's propelling those commodity prices up. There you go. Now over here on Japan finally had a good day. It had been struggling there off and on, but right now it's up. It finished. Tokyo's closed now. Finished up not quite 1%, but decent day. And now London, it was sliding upward nicely, and then there was a sell-off there. Knocked it down, didn't knock it down terribly, but now it looks like it's bouncing back from that profit taking that happened a couple hours ago over there in London. And London may finish, it looks like it's London's going to finish the day on the plus side, although it's probably not going to be anything spectacular. It's up only a little more than 0.25% right now. All of this is not just by way of enhancing your general knowledge of markets, although that's fun to do if you're a geek like I am. But this has real life impact on the world of corporate finance, the world of investments. In investments, obviously, prices going up and down has a lot of impact. However, there is another side to it as well. In corporate finance, those interest rates, a corporation that is small can ignore what's going on here. But a corporation of any substantial size has to appreciate whither go the costs in the larger markets. In, for example, in bond yields, so will go your cost of capital. Because if yields on treasuries are going up, that means that other interest rates are falling, specifically yields to maturity on corporate debt will be following suit going up. There is an increase in your weighted average cost of capital right there. And of course, it impacts the other component costs of capital as well. Just as a quick reminder to you, with a marker that works, let's try this one. Oh, yeah. You got the after-tax cost of debt. That's one of your component costs of capital. And then you just go down the line. You've got your cost of preferred stock, your cost of existing common stock, and your cost of new stock. And you put those together to get the weighted average cost of capital. That's the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of preferred times the cost of preferred. This glass just slurps the ink out of my markers. Plus the weight of common stock times the cost, well, the weight of existing shareholders of retained earnings, as the book calls it, times the cost of retained earnings, plus the weight of new capital times the cost of new capital. Okay, we've got this. That's weighted average cost of capital. Now, before I go on to the spreadsheet, and I don't mess with this too much in arithmetic ways, you've seen how to calculate each of the component costs of capital. And then we bake that into a spreadsheet that can do it for us if we put it with the inputs we put in. However, before I go to that, the weighted average cost of capital. Companies spend a lot of serious concern about weighted average cost of capital. Does it go up? Does it go down? Where is the optimal capital structure? And what is the weighted average cost of capital at that optimal, the minimum of the weighted average cost of capital? Where are those numbers? And so here's what the weighted average cost of capital is used for. A company calculates its WACC, and then it can just look at it. Yep. It can see whether it's going up or going down. They can, the company can see where it is relative to the minimum weighted average cost of capital. In other words, are we near our optimal capital structure? But there's a darker problem. It is famously used as the discount rate for present values. And the that's what it's used for. It's when you we'll do next in the next class, we'll do capital budgeting. Net present value is the present value of the future expected cash flows from the project larger than the cost of the project at the start. That discount rate, oftentimes they will pull out WACC. That's what they will use as the weighted average cost of capital. So you've got Project A, Project B, Project C, Project D. They will run the present value of the future expected cash flows from each one and compare it to the cost right now of the start of the project. And that's a bad thing to do because projects are, their discount rates are wholly dependent upon the risk of the project. A one-size-fits-all, the weighted average cost of capital, probably isn't the right discount rate to use for any of the projects. Some of the projects would have discount, they're safe projects, so they'd probably have a discount rate that would be below WACC. Some projects are quite risky. You should be looking at those projects based upon high discount rates, higher than the WACC. But this is where corporate America does it quite frequently, and it will take a new generation of finance professionals, that is you, to get out of this habit of just grabbing the WACC from an Excel spreadsheet and saying, we'll use that to discount, find the present value of future expected cash flows for all of our projects. It will be more work to do it when you have to customize every discount rate to the project, but it will give you much better results. Think about it this way. You have a project that is, what am I thinking here? That is low risk, lower than the WACC. Well, you take the present value of its future expected cash flows at the higher WACC, you are very likely going to reject that project because it has a negative net present value. Even though the project was good, you used a WACC, you used a discount rate that was too high. On the other hand, if you've got a project that's very risky, it should have a very high discount rate for the future expected cash flows to be brought back to the present, and you use the lower WACC, you are very likely going to accept a project that you should have rejected. And then all kinds of excitement comes from that in terms of the value of the corporation over time. Well, this project seems to have been a lot riskier than what we thought it was. Well, no doubt. You used a low discount rate, the WACC, when you should have used a higher discount rate. One thing I want to point out right here. These three components, don't forget, these three components, these three, generally speaking, in simplified terms, we would say that the WACC is the cost of debt times the after-tax cost, I'm sorry, the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of equity times the cost of equity. In other words, lumping these three together, because they all represent one form or another of equity. Preferred equity, internally generated equity, or externally generated equity. Now, the broad framework in which you do this, we would have each of these costs of debt, but then we also have to find the weight of each one in the capital structure. The weight of debt, the weight of preferred stock, the weight of retained earnings, and the weight of new common stock. We have to get these. Now, all you're going to do, but let me bring this up real quick here. Practically speaking, these should add up to 1.00. The devil is in the details. In other words, to get these weights, you have to get the market value of the debt, the market value of the preferred, the market value of the common stock, and the market value of new common stock. You'd have to get each one of those. Therein lies a problem. We've got $12 million in debt outstanding. That's what the par value of the debt was. We raised $12 million. That's not the market, though, because the price of the debt up and will go up and down. Well, what happens if the debt is 101 on the 100? Well, that would mean that 12 million isn't the number you would want to use for the market. The market's saying that each one of those bonds is 1.01 times 1,000. So you have to get, first of all, you have to get the yield to maturity, but you also have to say 12 million times the market value. Well, what about the common stock? We have 5 million shares of common stock outstanding. Well, what if the stock is $50 a share? Well, you'd have to take the number of shares outstanding times the market value of each of those shares to get that market value. Preferred, the same thing. You have to get market values of them. Fortunately, You don't have to. Excel works hard, so we don't have to. Now let's go through the narrative on this. Now you've got the Word document. And everything, and I've said this before and I'll say it again. For the many years that I was a math teacher, I taught arithmetic and algebra a lot. And I would just preach this gospel. Get the numbers and throw away the words. And everything you do in finance, it has to come down to numbers in some way or another. Okay, we get the numbers. Where does each one go? VID common stock just paid a $1.80 per share dividend. So there's D0 right there. We've got that. D0. And it's expected to grow at 2% per year. So there's G. That's 2%. The company has 22 million shares of common stock outstanding that are currently priced at $34 a share. So 34 is the price. Piece of S. And that 22 million times $34 per share should buy us the market value of the existing common stock. The company also has 120,000 shares of 1.5% cumulative preferred. So there's the preferred dividend at par value, $85 per share. So 1.5% times 85 will be the dividend D for the preferred stock. 120,000 shares of it? Well, you take the price per share, $85, times 120,000 shares, there's your market value of your preferred, the total value of it. I'm sorry, it's $63 per share. Boy, that stuff is really low on the totem pole. Okay, now, company, $12 million of debt, of 4.25% debt, due in 2031, quoting at 102.40 on the 100. That's all the information you'll need to get the R-sub-D, the yield to maturity. Once you see this in the Excel sheet, and I regret that I can't switch back and forth too well on these screens with on these overheads like that. But let's go in here. And this is the same thing as always. Let me shrink this down a little bit. And I've got, and I do have explanatory notes here. The numbers, where I got these from the word problem, as you can see, just to help you see how it's laid out. Okay, tax rate was 21%. Leave that alone. Now, the cost of debt. The cost of debt is going to be calculated from over here. This is just a mini of that table. Remember the bond yield calculation table? This is a mini version of it. All you have to do is put in the term. It's 2031. Wait a minute, 2031. That's 7 years. I'm sorry. 7 years. And there's your Uncle Bob. You got your yield, R sub D. And then R sub D times the tax rate, 1 minus the tax rate, will give you R sub D after taxes. You're not putting in anything that you haven't seen before. The preferred dividends is 1.5%. I just pulled that right out of the problem. Pull out the par value. Pull out the price of the preferred, the number of shares of the preferred. What's the existing common dividend, growth rate, and the price? And then over here on the far right side, the market values. What's the par value of the bonds? Well, it's $12 million. Well, how did I get the price of the bonds? Because the price of the bonds, it's $102.40. So 1.024 times $12 million. It's calculated for you. It's $12,288,000. It's the market value. It's calculated for you. number of preferred shares, that came from over here. It's just a repeat of that one. So we can get the cost of preferred, the market weight of preferred. How many common shares? 22 million. And I put in this 3 million. It's not, I would never ask you one with new common in it, and I don't do it in this one. We just use the existing order, the debt, the preferred, and the common that are already there. By all means, if you feel like getting frisky, that's just a scratch sheet. Here we go. All these costs, the cost of debt, all that does is take the yield to maturity times 1 minus the tax rate, and it gets that. You don't have to calculate it. It's done for you. The preferred stock, all that is the cost of preferred stock. That is dividend over the price of the preferred. So the dividend on the preferred dividend is 1.5 times 85, and then you divide that by the price here, and it gets you the cost of preferred. And the common stock, we use the constant growth rate formula. We take D1, take the dividend, where the hell is it? 180 times 1 plus the growth rate.
Is the growth rate 2%?
It is? Okay. I'm just testing your ass to see if you're watching me. I was playing with this before I uploaded it this morning, trying to see if I could thwart my model. But anyway, yeah, all you do is take the dividend times 1 plus G divided by the price of and then plus G, that gets you that. Now the market values, there's the market value of the debt, which was calculated over there. The market value of the commons of the preferred stock is the price of the preferred times the number of preferred shares outstanding. And the common stock, you take the price of the common stock divided by the dividend times 1 plus G, the current dividend times 1 plus G. I take that back. You take the price of the common stock times the number of shares outstanding of common stock. Where the hell is it? Right there. Those added up come to a total of $772,188,000. The weights are nothing but each market value divided by the total. Again, the weights are each of the component market values divided by the total market value of the company. And then here, you just take the sum product. Actually, I should, that says sum. Let me try something here. Equals sum product. That should be sum product. I might have to re-upload this. Sum product of that. Oh, I see what I did. But we could do it this way. Common should come up to be the same number. What? Let me control Z. I think I'll leave it the way it was. Okay. Why did that come up to be such a number? Each of these, huh? Should be some product. I don't understand why it's doing that, but when I use some product. Apparently, I noticed that it was doing that when I wrote this sheet. But anyway, there's your weighted average cost of capital right there. Now, I want you to visualize how hard it would be to do this by hand, piece by piece. This is an awful lot like work. I'm dying to see why the cost should be. But well, one thing to note here. Notice how the weight of debt and the weight of preferred are very small. So this is a company whose overall weighted average cost of capital is dominated by the cost of its retained earnings. Do you see that? They are 97% of the company, about 97.5% almost. And so the weighted average cost of capital is almost completely driven by the of 7.25%. It's almost completely driven by the cost of the retained earnings here. Now, that would not be the case if you had a company that was more heavily leveraged. Notice that this company is only about 1.6% debt. And the remainder of it is about 97.5% or more than that of equity. So in a case like this, the equity, which is your most expensive source of capital, would be the driving force. If you had a company, let's say that this company jacked up its how much it had in par value of bonds, so let's say $20 million. Is that $20 million? You see how that bumps the weighted average cost of capital down a little bit? It increases. The whole thing, though, is that there's so much common stock outstanding at a price of $63 a share that it's just going to take a lot of debt to bring that weighted average cost of capital down at all. An important point about that is that clearly this is a company that could afford to leverage itself more, because its weighted average cost of capital is going to keep decreasing as the company funds more of its projects through its debt. If I up the ante to, it needs $50 million. Let's say that it takes all of that out in debt. You see how debt is going to drive down the weighted average cost of capital of this company? So for the foreseeable future, it would be advisable for this company to finance any new projects with debt, because doing so is bringing down the overall cost of capital of the company. And this takes it from an abstraction to something that is an action parameter. We now should finance through debt, because at this point we can lower the overall weighted average cost of capital by doing so. That's how you do these problems. They are not that hard if you excuse me, if you stick to this Excel sheet and just take the numbers that you see in the problem and translate them over. So on a final exam, I can give you a problem like this and it looks like a freaking nightmare. But if you know how to manipulate the sheet, just get the numbers in there. You should have a place, at least one place, for every number you see in this narrative. And if you can do that, then this problem shouldn't take you more than about 5 minutes to do. I want to make sure. Yeah. Okay, so this problem is there in your files. And what was I thinking? The problem is there in your files, and so is the Excel worksheet. It's called WACC space final. And certainly you can tweak it around and write more notes in it if you want to help to make it more explanatory to you. But stick to this, and you do not have a problem with probably what is the deepest problem in the course, this one. And from here, it comes up for air considerably for most of the rest of the course. But for now, in a couple of minutes, you're going to have a quiz open for you. And when you're finished with the quiz, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.